We're continuing in the 49th Psalm. The primary subject of this psalm is the state of those who place an improper emphasis on being rich. Now, certainly this applies to the poor people because they, many times, have such a desire to be rich that they lose their sense of perspective and their sense of values and strive more toward riches than they do toward spiritual things. But it also definitely does apply to the rich people. They're the ones who truly have experienced the condition of being rich, and they are the most greatly tempted to place an improper perspective or thought on the idea of being rich. And so he's comparing their condition in verse 14. He says, like sheep they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Now, they are going to be laid in the grave, he says, like sheep. They are to be treated like animals as far as death goes. They don't have any way that they can buy themselves out of this state of death. And it's as though a flock of sheep were being led to the slaughter pen. They're to be put to death. That's the same condition these rich men are in so far as death is concerned. They're laid in the grave. They will be placed in the grave. They're going to eventually find that that's going to be their habitation. That's going to be their abode. That's going to be the dwelling place that they're going to all occupy. And he further says, death shall feed on them. That is, they're going to be placed in the grave, and they're going to be at the total mercy of death. Death shall feed upon them. There'll be no way that they can defend themselves. There'll be no way that they can protect themselves. There'll be no getting out of it. Death is going to feed upon them. It's just like those sheep that are led to the slaughter. They are led there for a purpose, and that purpose is so that they can be eaten. They're going to be consumed by their master, by their captor. And so it is with the rich. Death shall feed on them. And then he says, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Now those that are not wicked, those that do not place an inordinate amount of stress upon riches, those that have built for themselves a treasure in heaven, those that have built for themselves a treasure is going to be laid up for them after this life, they're referred to as the upright, and they shall have dominion over them in the morning. They are going to rule over those wicked ones, and that time is what he describes here as in the morning, and it has to apply to the morning of the resurrection. He's talking about a resurrection time here. He's talking about the morning in which the righteous are going to be allowed to come from the graves in a victorious manner there to live forever with the Savior. This has to be an Old Testament reference to resurrection of the dead. That's the only way that the upright could have dominion over them, and that's the only morning this could possibly be talking about. So we see here a very refreshing reference to resurrection from the dead. And it's referred to as something that the upright are going to participate in. They shall have dominion over them in the morning, and their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. Now, this is a little difficult phrase, but it's still talking about the wicked in the state of death. Their beauty. The word beauty here actually means strength, but it properly would be translated as meaning something to do with the form or their beauty or the character that their body would take on. It shall consume in the grave. It's going to be destroyed. It's going to be changed. It's going to face corruption. And so all the things that they put their stress upon as being something that's of high desirability, they feel that it has great value. They feel that it is so important, that it is so precious. It's going to be consumed in the grave. It's going to be changed. Their beauty or their strength shall consume in the grave. And then the last phrase is, from their dwelling. And that simply means that the grave is going to be their dwelling place. That's where they're going to be living. That's going to be their habitation. There'll be no way that they will get out of that. There'll be no way that they can change their abode. And that abode is going to consume them. That abode is going to be the place where death shall feed on them. And they're going to stay there until the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Then in verse 15, he begins to contrast the condition of the righteous and their relationship to death with the condition of the wicked. He says, but God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me, Selah. Here again, this has to be a reference to a resurrection of the dead. It does not mean that he will never see death. It does not mean that he'll never go into the grave. The psalmist couldn't possibly mean that. But what it means is that he's going to have some kind of a state that he'll be allowed to enter into after death, after the grave, that the wicked will not have. He's going to have a thing there that's called being redeemed. God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave. Sure, he's going to be taken into the grave. He's going to have to die. But death is going to lose its power over him. It'll not be able to hold him. It'll not be able to control him. And that's the great thing. And then at the time of the resurrection, that'll be the time when we can say, grave, where is thy victory? And death, where is thy sting? And so it is our last state that is our most important state. In Genesis 3:19, we learn that all are going to have to die. There he says, in the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. So we know that all are going to have to die, and all are going to have to go back to the dust. But we also know that after this grave, there's going to be a resurrection that's taught very plainly in the Bible. And then after that resurrection, there comes a thing known as the second death. And that's what we're trying to avoid, and that is the power that the second death would have over us. We read in Revelation 2, verse 11, He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. So the second death is the one that we're trying to avoid, and that's the death that'll come after the resurrection and after the judgment day, and that's the one that the righteous are going to be protected from. So he says, God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me, Selah. This reception he's talking about that God's going to give him, this protection that God's going to give him, is something that's denied the wicked. The wicked are not going to be allowed to have this. They're not going to be allowed to be given this protection and this eternal home by God. So verses 14 and 15 here compare the state of the wicked in regards to death with the state of the righteous in regards to death. And it is certainly a very great contrast between those two conditions. So it says in verse 16, Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. So now he's giving the true thought that we should have, not only towards riches, but towards those who have riches. It's a very easy thing for a person to begin to have a lot of respect for somebody because he may be rich, and even be afraid of the power that he has because he is rich. Because when one is rich, they seem to have more power and more ability to carry things out, and it just seems like that maybe they're being better blessed by God than somebody else is. It seems that maybe they have more authority, more power actually conferred on them by God than other people do because of the great wealth that they have. But he's saying here not to be afraid when one's made rich. Do not be afraid of his riches, because his riches do not give him any more power over you than if he were not rich, actually. When he's made rich, he says, when the glory of his house is increased. Now, one of the real common things that is a mark of riches is whenever those that are rich increase the glory of their house. They may build a new house. They may embellish the house they have. They may deck it with elaborate trappings and settings, and they may put expensive furniture and interior articles in it. So the glory of his house is increased. And this is a sign of wealth. It's a sign of power. It's a sign that is shown to the world that I now am very successful and that I am a powerful, influential person, and don't cross me. But he says, do not be afraid when that happens, when the glory of his house is increased. And so what he's trying to do here is to get us to realize that we're to place the proper perspective on riches and the acquiring of riches. It's not wrong to be wealthy. It's not wrong to desire to have wealth. But it's wrong to put an improper desire there so that we neglect our heavenly duties. We neglect the treasure that we're laying up for ourselves in heaven. and we build treasures on this in this life at the expense of our spiritual selves. Now that's where the problem comes in. So we're not to look upon wealth in that way, as though that is the way to have power, and that's the way to have security and peace, and that's the way to really achieve man's goal in life. And we're not to be intimidated by another person's wealth. We're not to place an inordinate amount of respect on that person simply because of the wealth. And so he says, be not afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. And he gives a reason in verse 17. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Now that's the main point of this whole psalm. That's the thing that should give us our truest perspective as to the value of riches. When he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. Now, we've already shown how that it's very sure that he's going to die. He must die. He will not escape death. He cannot buy himself or redeem himself or his brother from this state known as death. So, he's going to die, but when he dies, he shall carry nothing away. None of these things that he has had on this earth in the way of riches, in the way of wealth, none of these things shall he carry away. He cannot take any of them with him. He further says, his glory shall not descend after him. Now the idea of descending is really talking about going into the grave. When he goes into the grave, none of his glory is going to go with him into the grave. You know, when we stop and really look at it, it's only things that we build up in heaven, that treasure in heaven, that treasure up above, and we hope to ascend to that heavenly position, whether it be figurative or literally above. That is the only thing that's going to go after us, is that treasure that we built for the place above. Our glory that we get here in this life, all of the riches and power and honor, all of the high position, all of the great respect that men shall have for us, is not going to descend after us into the grave. In the grave, we're going to be made a very common person. Or that death is going to be the great leveler. We're not going to be any better than the poorest of the poor when we get to the grave, because none of the things that we have in this life are going to go with us. And so if that's where our hope is, if that's where our true feeling of security lies, if that's where we're banking on having all of our future existence, none of that's going to be there. You're going to be completely deprived of all of these earthly possessions. And so then there's no reason for us to fear these earthly things, because this person is going to lose his hold on them. Sooner or later, he will not be able to hold any of the things that he now has. I don't care how rich he is, how well entrenched he is in great wealth, he cannot hold any of it when he leaves this life. His glory shall not descend after him. And it is very likely that the Apostle Paul was referring to this verse when he made the statement in 1 Timothy 6 and 7, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. So, not only did we bring nothing in, just as surely we're going to bring nothing out, and so he shall carry nothing away. Then in verse 18, he further describes the thoughts and the philosophy that this rich person may have. He says, though while he lived, he blessed his soul. Now, while he was in this life, he took well care of himself. He used these riches and this wealth that he has to bless himself. He had fine houses and fine clothing, and he had good, pleasant surroundings, and he bought for himself the very best. He didn't want anything. He lacked nothing in the way of whatever comfort could be provided for his station in life. And so he blessed his soul while he lived. And he further says, and men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. Now there's several ways this can be interpreted. Some seem to think that the psalmist is talking about that men will praise you when you do well. And that so you just live the godly life and you're going to receive praise of men. But the context seems to still be talking about the rich person here. And I think what he's really saying is that whenever this person blesses himself, when he does so well for himself, this causes men to also praise him because he's done well to himself. And so the person has the big, nice, fine house, and the person drives the big automobile and wears the fine clothes and has the high standard of living, then this causes other men to give him praise simply because he's doing so well for himself. And we see that today publications like national magazines may feature somebody's house and somebody's estate and their lifestyle and show how great it is, and people love to read about it and to kind of drool over that way of life. And so men do praise him when because he's done well to himself. But this is a common fallacy that many of the rich people fall into, and it's something that certainly may be a very bad sign. It may be a sign of putting too much emphasis on wealth. For we read in the parable of the rich man in Luke 12, beginning with verse 16. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years, take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee, then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasures for himself, and is not rich toward God. Now that's Jesus' teaching along this same subject. And so what he's saying here is that this person blessed his soul. Like the rich man in that parable says, soul, take thy ease. I'm going to just store up more and more goods for myself. I'm going to really take it easy now. And so he didn't know that this night would his soul be required. So he says in verse 19, he shall go to the generation of his fathers. They shall never see light. Now this phrase, the generation of his fathers, simply means that he is going to go into that state of death and to join his ancestors who went there before him. And although he has been separated from them by death, when they died first, now he's going to be reunited with them by death whenever he follows them in that same state of death. So he'll go to the generation of his fathers. And the implication is that just as they didn't know any better about how to serve God, he also doesn't know any better, and so he's not going to leave that association, that company that they have there in that state of death. And he says further, they shall never see light. And this just simply seems to teach that those in that state will never again come back to this life. They'll never be allowed to set foot back upon this earth in its present state, in its state of living in this present light of the sun. They're not going to ever come back and take hold of those riches that they once so proudly and fondly beheld. They're never going to come back and assume that position of honor that they used to have. They'll never see light. But he's going to be staying with that place where the generation of his fathers is, that state of death. And although those fathers have been dead for hundreds and maybe thousands of years, and they've never come back, even so, the same is going to be true of him. He'll never come back either. They'll never see light. So that person is not to be feared. Because the place that we have the most to fear is on the judgment day. It's going to be when we have to face our God. And so that person is not going to have any more power on that day than any other person has. He will not have these riches to embellish him during that time that he is in the grave. All of these things upon the earth will not be his possession anymore. And so he concludes by saying in verse 20, man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. Now this is a very deep thought, but it certainly does apply. Man that is in honor, that is man that has been allowed to have a position of honor, a position of power, a position in which he occupies wealth, and has been allowed to use wealth. He that has that state, but who also understands not, he doesn't know the true value of his wealth. He doesn't know the true meaning of how to use it. He has lost his perspective of how to serve God, of what real treasure is, what spiritual treasure is, he's in a state of understanding not, then he is like the beasts that perish. A person who has honor and who has understanding and who knows how to properly apply things, he has great advantage. He has great blessing and he has great position. But the one who has the honor and doesn't understand how to use it, he is like the beasts that perish. And that's what's going to happen to him. He'll be no better than a beast so far as his having done anything for himself is concerned. He will not be one that is pleasing to God. He will not be one that has built up anything in the future. He has nothing to look forward to. He has no true wealth at all. And so he's going to be strictly in a state of dishonor after he leaves this life. For he's going to be like the beasts that perish. Now, you know, we all can have some honor in this life. We all have some wealth. But what really counts is to have the understanding that goes with it. The amount of honor we have is not very important. It's the amount of understanding that we have. And you can have a great amount of honor and not understand the true value of things, not have the true perspective, not have your sense of values well placed, and you can be like a beast that was going to perish. So let's work to have understanding. Let's put these worldly treasures in their proper perspective, and let's have a true sense of value about them so that we really do have understanding, and then when we die, we're going to be like a child of God and not like a beast. So ends the 49th Psalm. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.